Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt, ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores!
Karlsson, Karlsson,
welcome everybody to another episode of Keeping Karlsson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the longest running fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys. We're going to try to keep the run going. There were five hat tricks yesterday. Brian, we're going to hit off another one today. I'm your host, Elon Dubrovsky. That made sense, kind of. I don't know. Pretty crazy, right? Draisaitl, Gregor, Pastrnak, Tuck, and Verhaeghe all at hat tricks. Verhaeghe scored four. Anyway, Elon Dubrovsky here, in for another mega show for whoever is still in their leagues. We don't even make this interesting for people whose leagues are over. That's our job, right? And the person who's going to help me do that is, of course, my co-host, the Fantasy Hockey Robot, the Poobah Prognostication, the IPP MVP, Brian Kalm.
Hello, Elon. Hello, everybody. It's great to be here. And yes, we're going to try and score a figurative hat trick with this episode in each of the three periods of each of the two games, or however it is we portion out our shows. And like you said, Elon, tonight is a good, it's still a good time to listen, right? If you're still competing, absolutely. Listen, get info, prepare. If you're not still in it, the way to get in it next year is to be listening to it now. But I'm preaching to the choir, right? You already know if you're listening.
Yeah, I mean, they're already listening.
Maybe your friends don't. So go tell them.
Well, wait till next year at this point. Don't recommend the podcast at the end of the year.
I don't know. Recommend it all both times.
Sure.
How about that?
If you're going to do it multiple times, then sure. If you're only going to give us one, you know, because some people, you know, recommend. Yeah, you don't want to recommend a show to someone and then they watch the worst episode. They're like, no, you got to watch at least five before it gets good. Like, most people are gonna be like, get out of here. I'm not waiting that long. Apparently The Leftovers is like that. And I watched one and I was kind of bored and I didn't keep going. And then people tell me it's the best show of all time. I was like, oh, how many? And they're like, oh, at least three, four. Like, all right, maybe one day. Anyways, Brian, we got a lot to get to here. So let's dive right in. The plan for today is I got a bunch of, typical, right? Injuries, outjuries, hot streaks, cold streaks. But of course, we're going to look at this with the lens of what can we do next week? how is this going to affect me right now? Because anyone who's still, going in their leagues doesn't care about anything long term. We just need to focus on, I've got the schedule up for next week. So I guess that'll be a big part of our conversation, though. If you listen to Matchup Maximizer that I recorded yesterday, the schedule next week is pretty wonky. It's pretty much everyone plays Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, then a smattering of games, two games on the other days. So yeah, we'll do our best to come up with some good tips for you guys.
Yeah, and also tonight we're actually going to have the Cupful, the Keeping Karlsson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League champion and finalist, which is still a real big feather in a cap, joining us in about, we're hoping about 30 minutes real lifetime. We'll see how much that is in edited time. So see, and congrats, by the way, the Cupful, this is it. This is the final Sunday. So congrats to everyone who competed. We will fet all the winners next week. We're going to name them. Milan's going to love it. Going to make him sit through it and not blink the whole time.
No, naming winners is worth it. That's worth the time.
Okay.
Especially when Brian wants to name every person who's won every league in history, then that gets a little long. I think definitely a couple winners are worthy of being name dropped.
Andy in the chat also, thank you, reminding us that we're 32 beats is going to be coming up through the summer too. So stay tuned for all of that playoff pool coming. And also just before we get started, Elon, we are presented by DauberHockey.com. We use Frozen Tools religiously for this show. For this show, when we record and when I prep, I got three tabs. I got our show prep notes. I got Natural Stat Trick and I have Frozen Tools. Those are the three tabs I need. And then there's about 45 more I open throughout. Mm-hmm. But those are the essentials. When I get started, when I sit down to work, that's it. So check it out if you're not already. Frozen Tools, DauberHockey.com.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I love Dauber Hockey. But okay, Brian, let's get into it. Let's start with the Bruins, okay? The Bruins are playing right now they've played today versus St. Louis. This is a noteworthy team because they won that game. They win most games this year. And they're getting to the point where they're just sitting people all the time. In today's game, So Bergeron was out. Krejci was out. McAvoy was out. Apparently Bergeron and Krejci were like with injuries. Like it says here, Matt Porter has a tweet here. Bergeron upper, lower. Krejci lower. Because of course, like Jeremy said on the last short shifts, all injuries in the NHL are either upper or lower. McAvoy was resting. Of course, Taylor Hall also out. Foligno out. So anyway, Boston has nothing to play for, right? Like, they've clinched the President's Trophy, I believe, at this point. So if you are banking on these Bruins, I don't know. It could be a tough road ahead, unfortunately. That's why we ended the couple this week. And maybe that was even too late because Bergeron already missed some games. But in the meantime, this does mean potentially good things for the people who aren't, you know, sitting. Like, basically anyone exposed to Pastrnak, who's on his quest for 60 goals. Like, for example, Tyler Bertuzzi, he scored a power play goal today. He's normally not on the top power play, but it was assisted by Pastrnak and Hampus Lindholm. So he's someone that, you know, maybe gains some value here. Of course, Pavel Zacha has been on, like, a great run. No points today, but he went on a great run. You know, just basically Pastrnak has been scoring, like, a ton of goals, and so Zacha has been getting in on it with him. And, yeah, I was going to bring up, actually, how Jake DeBrusk was kind of cold, and I wonder if that was, you know, partially because of like a Patrice Bergeron being out. DeBrusk did score a goal today, so that's helpful. So I don't know, like, how do you parse out all of this Bruins news here in terms of like strategizing for next week? Like, Boston has Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, so they don't even play until Thursday, but they do at least have one off day game on the Sunday, as opposed to most teams that only play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So where are your thoughts here on Boston?
My thoughts are, I don't think, like, you got to be careful. You got to be ready. I think what you need to be doing is checking game day tweets, every Bruins practice, and like leading up to the pregame skates to see who might be sitting. Like, it's been a long, I think it's been at least 25, 30 years. Like, I'm thinking back to those Red Wings teams in the 90s since we've seen a team as dominant as this Boston team. Like, it is like so clearly head and shoulders above the rest of the league in the regular season. So yeah, we end the Cupful now, even though there's still a week or two left in the NHL season, because it gets silly with players resting and all the implications from a player resting or a goalie resting and how that impacts everything and makes it hard to predict. We're already there with the Bruins. So I think if you rely on any Bruins, you'll just have to be careful about having them in your lineup when they're not playing, especially if you might have someone on the bench that you can put in instead. I'll take the guys playing with Pastrnak. I'll take the guys playing with Marchand, except Charlie Coyle, who is up with Marchand right now, has been super cold lately, even though tonight, line one, power play one, he has two shots, but no points to show for it. I think maybe
Charlie Coyle, I don't think power play one. I think just, it looks like it was Coyle with Marchand and DeBrusk on a line, and then Pastrnak, Bertuzzi, Zacha, and then the top power play, Marchand, Pastrnak, Bertuzzi, Zacha, and Hampus Lindholm is what I'm saying.
It looks like he split time. You're right, not on the top power play. Thank you. Power play, 55% share of the team's power play minutes, but not actually on the top unit. I guess Hampus Lindholm is the one guy that I'm interested in rostering who's not like one of the marquee obvious Bruins through to Thursday. But aside from him, I would not be hanging on. Like, I don't think I'm holding Bertuzzi or Zacha, especially if your lineups are full on Thursday and Saturday. Like, I'll hold Pastrnak, Marchand, Bergeron, Lindholm, maybe McAvoy. Like, I've been pretty open about not getting that one right. But yeah, be careful rostering those Bs.
Yeah, like Jake DeBrusk, who's been so great for so long, he wasn't on like that top power play today. But it wasn't like that much power play time, so I don't know how much to read into it. But if you look at his previous game log, it's been a few games now of DeBrusk not being on PP1. So might not be the final savior like he was for like a lot of the season. Like, maybe I want Bertuzzi at this point if he's going to be getting the Pastrnak exposure to even strengthen on the power play.
I probably should have named DeBrusk. He is playing with Marchand at 5-on-5, and that's pretty good when Marchand is playing and when Bergeron is playing. You know, like, I assume he's going to get at least one of them, but who knows? The Bruins can literally do anything they want the rest of the season. But at least DeBrusk is shooting. He's got 7 shots over his last, this weekend's games. So that's a start. So I was negligent not to name him. He is now named.
Well done. Okay. Let's do a couple of goalie injuries. Obviously, next week, I think with a tough schedule like this, one strategy could be to just focus your streaming. You know, if you have four ads a week, for example, like maybe just grab goalie starts when you can get them. And in Ottawa, so Mads Søgaard is out. He has an illness. He didn't travel. So I don't know how long he'll be gone for. But in the meantime, Cam Talbot came back from his injury, and Cam Talbot has been like pretty brutal since returning, and he wasn't doing that well before. Unfortunately, he let in 4 goals on 11 shots versus Philly a couple games ago. Today versus Columbus, this game is still going. Ottawa's up 3-2. Ottawa's only had 14 shots against, so he only has 2 goals against, which isn't so bad, but like on 14 shots against, that's like a really terrible save percentage. So that, maybe that's not his fault as much as like just the Columbus Blue Jackets and all their injuries. But I mean, if Søgaard is out, I guess they can start bringing up one of these random guys from the minors who's been doing like a Ferguson or a Mandalese, but I'd imagine Talbot gets the majority of the starts. Just the question is, do you have the guts to actually put him in?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. If he's playing, I think you need to go ahead and put Talbot in and hope for the best, but he's definitely, it has not been the best for Cam Talbot against Philadelphia on Thursday. He faced 11 shots, and that game went to overtime. Because he gave up 4 goals on the way of seeing those 11 shots. And, like, he should have been there. It's hard to stay warm and in the game, but, like, come on, give your team a save. And he wasn't able to do that. So I wouldn't be, like, we'll see what the prognosis here is on Søgaard and how long he'll be out. But I would be wondering if maybe the Sens give Dylan Ferguson another look as like, you know, a little thank you. See how he's doing. Cam Talbot heading to free agency. He made $3.7 million for the last 3 years. We'll see what happens. I wouldn't want him. It hasn't been a great season for him on the whole. Okay, you know what? There were some times where Cam Talbot was doing really well. And actually, you know, he's got confounding numbers, all right? Because I can tell you that Cam Talbot had a 70% quality start percentage this year, which is crazy. Like, that's top notch. That's an elite number. Of his 30 starts, to have 70% quality, amazing. But he had 7 really bad starts. So basically, it was out of those 30 starts, 21 of them were quality, 7 were really bad. So it just leaves like 2 in the gray area. And at 5-on-5, Cam Talbot's been really bad this year. He's been playing 74 save points below his expected Fenwick save percentage, which is not, to me, it's definitely not starter caliber. And that's not somebody who I think has earned himself a starter's job next year. So we'll see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if Ferguson gets a start or Søgaard, as soon as he's ready, gets tossed back in there.
Yeah, okay. And then another goalie, I guess, injury over in Anaheim. It seems like John Gibson sometimes like has a really bad game and then like gets pulled midway through the game. That's what happened yesterday. But he wasn't pulled just for like not playing well in this loss to Edmonton. The report, according to like Ali Lozoff's tweet, like John Gibson will not return lower body injury. So I don't know if this is like a long-term serious thing or not. Like Dostal got the start today for Anaheim, and we'll see how he does. Dostal has been like pretty decent this year, all things considered, like playing behind this Ducks team. So let's say Gibson is out next week. Let's say we get some news, and then, you know, you've got Talbot and you've got Dostal available to you. Who are you more confident in putting in your net for a fantasy finals?
Well, as great as Talbot's 70% quality start percentage is, Dostal has 10 quality starts out of 13, which is that's amazing. 77% quality starts. But like Talbot, he's barely above 900 in save percentage. So like it's you're great or you're, I mean, but 10 out of 13 is pretty good. So I'd actually lean Dostal. Should also point out, like, Ottawa is missing Shabbat and Hamonic. There might also be one other blue line injury that I'm not
well, Jacob Chychrun.
Oh yeah, Chychrun, that's it. So like they are hurting on the blue line. They've played Philly and Columbus while hurting on the blue line, so maybe it hasn't totally shown as they give up no shots in any of those games, but it's they're in rough shape if they ever are going to face a team that's ready to I'll take Dostal. I'll try him. Like Talbot could be as good. It's a coin flip. But I think it's more likely that Dostal plays more. Like, assuming they have the same number of games in the schedule and you're going to see the same amount from either, I think Dostal is more likely to play the full slate than Talbot.
Yeah, and it'll be fun to follow what happens in Anaheim. Dostal, yeah, having a good season, like you're saying, in the limited action he's gotten. He's only 22 years old. A lot of people think he's like the future of this franchise in net. So we'll see. And they've got a lot of good young players. Like, you know, come 5 years from now, we'll be talking about Dostal. Who knows? We thought 5 years ago we'd be talking about Gibson as like a perennial Vezina winner. And obviously that hasn't happened. So we'll see how things go. Hopefully Dostal gets a better go of it than Gibson has. Just never getting a team in front of him. That's very good. By the way, you mentioned all those injuries in Ottawa. So did the short shifts guys this past week. And they were saying how like Jake Sanderson, by the way, great job to Shams and Jeremy for holding down the fort with Lewis on vacation. Two really educational and entertaining shows. But yeah, they were talking about Jake Sanderson and how can you not go grab this guy? He's going to get all the power play time. He's like the only guy there, basically. There is like a defenseman that the Sens have called up, Brian, which I'm sure you're somewhat more familiar with than I am. But you'd think Sanderson is the guy. Unfortunately, Jake Sanderson, ice cold. No points now in 7 games. Still no points today versus Columbus. I see he's taking some shots. He has some blocks, but nothing to show for it. At this point, if you picked up Sanderson with all these injuries, are you like just being like, I'm going to swap to someone else? Or at this point, just hold him for next week. He's in a good spot. Like eventually something will go in.
Yeah, I think it depends on who your other options are. Like it's promising that Sanderson's taken 9 shots over his last 2 games. So that's a great spot. And there's no competition right now for the top power play, except I see Elon looking at today's lines that Erik Brännström has split top power play quarterback duties. And I'm not sure if that's like intentional or just the way things have shaken out. But Brännström has actually, Elon, you know, I'm a Brännström truther. He's been doing really well. Like he has been proving himself as a legit top 4 defenseman. Unfortunately, he like never shoots the puck. So I'm not sure if getting more power play time would help that or do anything for fantasy value other than taking away from Jake Sanderson. But I think Jake Sanderson is probably more often than not going to be the guy. As I say, every time he is getting better, literally every game, and more responsibility too, especially with all the injuries to the blue line. So he'd be a decent guy. You know how Owen Power at some points this season was like, you know, I'll try him. He's on the ice for, you know, hopefully a bunch of goals. I'd put Sanderson a touch above that in likelihood of getting in on them.
Okay, yeah. And okay, how about another goalie injury? We've got Carter Hart is out in Philly. This is another one where I'm not sure exactly like how long he'll be. Like today was just like Hart is out again. They ended up going with Ersson in net. And I guess this is a game going on right now and it hasn't been going that great. Pittsburgh's up 3-1 over Philly. So Ersson, you know, he's had a big workload, like 28 shots against. He's stopped 25 so far. They're halfway through the third here. So we'll see if Carter Hart comes back or not. Of course, the big news out of Philly, aside from the goalie injury, is Travis Konecny returned. And I feel like totally under all of our radars. Like, I don't think any of us were expecting Konecny to come back anytime soon. It's not as if he was like practicing or saying he's day to day for a while, then finally he played. Just all of a sudden, it was like, Konechny's back for that game yesterday against Buffalo. And what do you know? He scored a goal, took 5 shots. Today, no points so far, but he's already got 4 shots in this game against Pittsburgh. So if somehow, you know, Konecny was dropped in your league and you're going into the finals, like, just seems like such a nice person that you could potentially pick up. Or if you just have him in your IR, you're just happy to be able to make some room for him. Philly goes next week 4 times, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and he's probably better than your bottom roster player. I think you want to get all 4 games out of him.
Definitely. I mean, I love, you know, one thing about what people were asking, you know, should I activate Konecny, leave him on my bench? What do I do with him coming back from injury? And it's like, yeah, maybe he'll be eased in. No, Travis Konecny was not eased into the lineup 22 minutes in his return on Saturday against Buffalo on the power play, on the penalty kill. And he took 5 shots, scored on one of them, threw a hit, probably came in, I didn't watch, probably in like the first 15 seconds, you know, get back in the game. But 9 shots now for Konecny in his 2 games back, seeing a ton of ice. I don't see any reason to be any further down on him at all, because we weren't when he got injured. So it's been great to see him come back from a month-long layoff and just pick up where he left off.
Yeah, and obviously if, you know, we're into Konecny and he might not be available in your league, I guess the next best bet would be to get players exposed to this guy for these 4 games for Philly. Like, people on hot streaks recently have been Morgan Frost. He's been like so good lately. Noah Cates. Why don't you like fill us in? Who have been the Konecny line mates lately that might be on your radar?
Okay, yeah. So looking at Philly today, which is Sunday, you had Konecny playing with Wade Allison and Noah Cates. You had Tippett playing with Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee. And you had Scott Laughton. There's like one fantasy relevant potential guy on each line. Laughton with Lemieux and Delorier, and then Kevin Hayes playing with JVR and Kiefer Bellows. those are the lines. And I feel like that's as good as I can do in terms of like projecting. Morgan Frost has continued to do really well this week. He's had a couple like really strong stretches this year. They haven't all been consecutive, but coming into tonight, Frost had 5 points in 3 games, including 4 goals on 11 shots. And, you know, I can stretch back 10 games and tell you that Morgan Frost has been worth the price of a point per game, basically, and a good chance at taking more than a few shots in a night. So I would not hesitate if Morgan Frost is available. I think he'd be my next choice behind Konechny and Tippett, then Frost. And then I think it is just a crapshoot of a bunch of guys who may or may not point at any given night.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Definitely Frost and Tippett would be my top two over in Philly after Konechny. And of course, Tony D'Angelo, if you have room for defenseman, and he's out there as well. Brian, I've got another cold defenseman for you, kind of in the same line as Jake Sanderson over in Winnipeg. And yes, some more injuries and outries. We got a lot to get to. Okay, but let's take a quick break. We'll be back soon. You're listening to Keeping Carlson. All right, we are back, Brian. And yeah, I mentioned that we have a cold defenseman over in Winnipeg. I think we talked about it maybe on the last show, but the cold streak continues with Josh Morrissey. What's going on with this guy? All of a sudden, and you were saying like Winnipeg is cold, like, you know, don't worry about it. Like once they heat up, probably he'll heat up as well. But his cold streak continues. He actually missed a game. Then he came back. He's playing today versus New Jersey, where Winnipeg is having a great game. They're up 4-0 already against Vitek Vanacek and the Devils. You'd think, all right, this is the breakout game for Morrissey. No points. Hey, he's +1. He was on the ice for one of the goals. But yeah, are we at a point where we need to be worried about Morrissey? Or is this just like, hopefully someone else is worried, he gets dropped, and then he could end up helping you in your finals?
It was pretty hard. Like, well, last week when we talked about him, it was Winnipeg's cold, right? Like, they're not scoring a whole lot. We can't expect much from them. But then, yeah, Winnipeg scores 6 against Detroit. And Josh Morrissey isn't even in the lineup to take advantage of that. He continues to shoot, but Winnipeg continues to generally fail to score. Like going up leading up to that 6-goal outburst against Detroit, Winnipeg had just 9 goals over their last 7 games. And in that time, their power play has been atrocious. Just 1 for 30. Actually 1 for 33, because even though they scored 6 goals against Detroit, none of them came on the power play. So a single power play goal over their last 9 games now, it doesn't bode well for anyone, except it's also not sustainable. So I think, Elon, so long as Josh Morrissey continues to shoot and continues to quarterback the top power play, he's still worth trying. And I think this snake bite will wear off at some point, but it's a really tough time for him to go cold.
Yeah, the one nice thing in Winnipeg is some of these forwards that were cold for a while have been unlocked for the most interesting reason. Blake Wheeler and Nikolai Ehlers were both doing nothing for so long. Then they switched up the lines, and those two have been playing with Vladislav Namestnikov, of all people. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that didn't even realize Namestnikov was on Winnipeg. And yeah, since that line change, all of a sudden I'm seeing 2 points for Wheeler today, just like 2 points in that last game versus Detroit. And Ehlers, kind of like same result. He's scored a goal today. He had a goal and assist in the last game. So is this all we needed? Was just a shakeup? Now those two are playing with Namestnikov and things are going to be good going forward? Or maybe, obviously, it might have just been that they were going to break out of the slump eventually regardless. But yeah, there was a question on our Discord about who people wanting to make a stream for, like a Friday Sunday player. And I remember Wheeler was one of the people on the list, and I was like thinking, oh, I don't know, like he is super cold, but he's like Wheeler. I should recommend. I didn't end up recommending Wheeler, and now I regret it, because now he's had 2 great games, and I'm sure the person who asked that wishes that they went with Wheeler as well. I do believe one of the people on the Discord, which I won't name check, I do remember who this was like, don't take Wheeler, he's garbage. So obviously that was what unlocked Wheeler to have these 2 great games. So see, I guess Winnipeg is getting that offense going again, and so that'll be helpful to anyone who has these Jets going into the finals, and maybe you'll want to stream in, maybe you'll even want to stream in a Namestnikov playing with these two guys who he's gotten going again.
Yeah, well, everybody looks great after a 6-goal game. We'll see if the Jets' problems are fixed for good or if they turn back into the team that they've been for the last while. But Ehlers and Wheeler, again, like still suffering for the same reason Morrissey has been. So it's nice that they could, though, participate in the 6-goal game. Really want to see that power play get going, though, in Winnipeg. And if it does, Ehlers is in a position to capitalize. Wheeler, not so much, according to today's lines against New Jersey. It's nice to see Ehlers back on the top unit, though. Rick Bowness was starting to get called out by media and fans. Like, everyone was turning on him, and rightfully so, for just, like, you know, Ehlers playing 15 minutes a night, including a couple, like, long benchings. Come on. What are you doing? So play your best players as much as you can, and especially if your team is not scoring. I'm sure he's like, well, we want to score the right way. Well, if you're not scoring the right way, I'd say it's just as bad.
Sure, of course, yeah. Well, I mean, Bowness is always... I still remember when he was the first coach of Ottawa back in the day. They didn't score very much either. So we knew then.
Yeah, right.
It didn't have to do with the fact that Sylvain Turgeon was like their best player.
Nothing to do with the fact that they had to change the expansion draft rules after that team came into the league because of how badly that turned out.
Right, we got another goalie injury to report, Brian. It's happened again. Shocked face. You know, gif right here, but Matt Murray is hurt for the Leafs. He started this game against Detroit, made, you know, it up to 8 shots against in 16 minutes, let in 2 goals, wasn't looking like a great game, and now he is out. And we don't know for how long. Shams is saying here he won't return to the game. I guess we'll find out more. I think for Toronto at this point, it's like, give it up. Look, Samsonov is your guy. Samsonov has been really good. He just shut out the Sens in the last game. Now we'll see how he does today against Detroit. But, you know, 916 save percentage on the season. Like, lucky for the Leafs, they took 2 bets in the summer. One of them is paying off. And we'll see if Samsonov will be the one to break the curse of these first round exits. It's not going to be Matt Murray. Like, at this point, and for fantasy, what are you going to do? I'm sure some people, like, streamed in Matt Murray because he was playing. And, like, why not? And maybe Toronto would split the games. He's hurt. I wouldn't be surprised if it was for the year at this point.
Yeah, and either the Leafs are going to try and get him back in game shape for the playoffs, or they'll rest him up, because I imagine they'd still rather him be the next option behind Samsonov if anything happens to Samsonov. But the Leafs also, like, we have that matchup confirmed between the Leafs and Tampa. Not a whole lot to play for either team. So that might mean a busier night for any Leafs goalie, which could be a good thing, depending on your format. But I assume it's going to be Samsonov, seeing the lion's share of any meaningful game, and the Leafs also being super careful not to lose him, because they know how hard it is to continue to compete when you keep losing your best players leading up to and during the playoffs.
Yeah, and of course, any talk about the Leafs should include looking at their most recent lines to just see who you want. And who knows, they've been shifting around a little bit. In today's game versus Detroit, Matthews was centering Bunting and Kali Yarncroc, and then Tavares was with Kerfoot and Nylander. So of the people you might be able to stream in, we're looking at like a Bunting, Yarncroc, Kerfoot situation, which has, I guess, been the same for a while. So a guy from the minors that was called up, Abruzzese, Nick Abruzzese, which is a fun name. And O'Brien, you love the fun names. He has a power play assist today, for whatever it's worth. Another recent call-up, Zahorna, Radim Zahorna. So, but probably you want to go with one of these Leafs, like Matthews and Marner, like totally hot again, like just scorching, destroying the league. So you probably want anyone exposed to those guys. And so Marner, by the way, isn't playing today, I should mention. So that's obviously a problem. But yeah, even just playing with Matthews is pretty good.
Yeah, just be prepared for guys to be resting on Toronto too, as we just talked about. But in the meantime, go ahead and grab anybody playing in that top six. It'd be fun if Abruzzese, for saying that right, got to line one. Then we could call him Abruzzese top.
Ah, okay. Very well done. Okay. So let's next go. Okay, so in Tampa Bay, I wanted to look into Mikhail Sergachev being injured. I'm not really sure like what the implications are here for fantasy, but definitely something we need to report. All we got was no update from John Cooper on Sergachev yesterday after the game, after he got hurt. So I don't know. Obviously, Hedman just gets back on power play one. There's nothing here, right? This is just like bummer if you have Sergachev and he's hurt. Like, obviously Tampa's not going to rush him back. They're locked in to play Toronto, which we knew for a long time, but now it's like officially official. So this would be obviously bad luck to lose Sergachev, who was doing so well recently.
Yeah, that would be terrible. Anybody who's had him has been really benefiting from Sergachev providing them with points. This is good news, though, for anybody who's had Victor Hedman, who has not really had a sniff of the top power play for going on a month now, like barely a shift with the top unit. So this is an opportunity for, as long as Tampa keeps Sergachev out, Hedman regains hopefully his full set of fantasy relevance. He's on pace for just a 51 point season, and that is because he's on pace for like 13 or 14 power play points, when last year Hedman had 38 power play points on his way to an 85-point season. The difference is basically that power play opportunity that he's lost this year. So good news for anybody who wanted to rely on Hedman this year and has made it despite him. He might be there for you quarterbacking the top power play as long as Sergachev is out.
Yeah, and hey, Shams is bringing up a good point. Tampa doesn't play until Wednesday next week, so maybe Sergachev will come back, and maybe you just get a free extra lineup spot for Monday, Tuesday, and then you bring Sergachev back in on Wednesday. That would be your best-case scenario, of course. Let's go to Montreal, another team that's, I guess it's not like resting players, I guess injured, like Raphael Harvey-Pinard missed the last game. I again, don't really have, like the Canadiens tweeted, head coach Martin St-Louis confirms that Raphael Harvey-Pinard won't play tonight. Joel Armia will play. Also, Kirby Dach injured again, which is a bummer because he had just come back and was looking pretty good. And with all of this going on, that left Nick Suzuki in that last game against Carolina to play with Drouin and Jesse Ylönen. And Suzuki, as you would expect, is cold once again, which is unfortunate. He went on a nice hot run and things were looking good. Maybe then like Kirby Dach came back and he was like clicking with Harvey Pinard, but now get like more injuries, as if it wasn't bad enough. And so yeah, with this current Nick Suzuki cold streak going into next week, where Montreal plays only the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, maybe we're at a point once again where you need to consider if you're holding him through the season or not. Obviously, he's like got the potential to have a multi-point game. He did a couple weeks ago. We had a couple multi-point games in a row, but I wouldn't be surprised also if the Habs have a lot of trouble scoring. They played Detroit on Tuesday, but you know, the way Nedeljkovic has been looking in Huso's absence, it's not even like guaranteed that they're going to score a lot of goals.
For Montreal, you're right, Elon, to point out that Suzuki may or may not be worth rostering the rest of the way. There have been lots of points this season where we've wondered whether or not he's been worth keeping, and he has had enough runs, I'd say, to have been worth keeping for at least, you know, if you held him during the month of February, you were pretty happy, but a lot of dry spells in and around that. So if you can't handle another dry spell, then you might not be able to handle Nick Suzuki on your roster. I'm actually, like, my takeaway from the rest of the Montreal season, honestly, Elon, is like looking to next year. I mean, you've got Suzuki, you've got Caulfield, and I think one guy that has creeped onto my draft list, or, you know, a late round flyer, is Raphael Harvey-Pinard. He's been doing really well. Like, I know he's injured, but, you know, coach said that he has proven that he has what it takes to succeed in the NHL, which is big. Like, he's cracked the NHL at the age of 24 after not even really, you know, he was good in the AHL. He wasn't dominant, but he was good. This is a 7th round pick who might be a top line player to start the season. Of course, a lot of things can change, but he's just someone I'm going to be keeping an eye out come draft season or come preseason next year.
Yeah, and of course, Kirby Dach, also someone who's really like had a bounce back after those disappointing first few seasons in Chicago, so it'll be fun.
Yeah, except they like him on the second line.
Yeah, but might be third line if they get Bedard, right? But I don't know. They'll figure something out. But I think, you know, top power play, and also hopefully Montreal fills out a little bit, and you don't need to be like Suzuki or bust, you know? Like maybe, like generally a second line top power play guy could be valuable if he's a talented player. Look at Evgeny Malkin over the years. He's been pretty good. Not to say that Malkin and Dach are the same yet. Brian, okay, let's take another commercial break. And then when we're back, we'll go over some more of these injuries, injuries, hot tricks, cold streaks, all the goods. Maybe we'll even have our tier one experts come on. So we'll find out soon. You're listening to Keeping Carlson. All right, we are back. And Brian, like I hinted at, we've got a special guest here joining us for part one of this episode. Holy cow. Ryan Wood is here, who I think at this point, can we say it's basically official? The tier one Kakupful ultimate champion. Ryan, before we talk about how amazing you are, like, welcome to the show. Like, you know, we're not worthy. Amazing to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
Hey, Elon, you're like formally passing the crown. We've got three ultimate champs on the air now, but only one present one. And Ryan, you did it in the fastest way possible. Ryan started in tier six last year, new patron, new Kakupful participant, and won the fast track. So scored more points in the regular season than we had 400 something teams. Ryan had the most points out of all of them, which gets you a free pass to the top tier. And it's like, oh, well, can, you know, without having been able to ply your trade, Ryan, in like tiers 1, 2, 3, like those are like training grounds for tier one or for a run at tier one, but you didn't need them. How did you get through the learning curve without those experiences?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a rocky start. I think coming in, it was sort of intimidating, and I think I almost like overcorrected. I tried to do too much early and kind of had to adjust for that. But I think like I had a decent draft, so that gave me a bit of leeway and some time to learn the ropes, and I had to learn quick.
Yeah, any like particular like moves you made or like draft picks or free agent pickups that you're like especially proud of, like that player is now going to go like always be in your memory as like this player won my league for me?
Yeah, I think for me it's mostly my draft. So like the fact that Matthew Tkachuk worked out as well as he did, I think was huge. Braden Point bouncing back was really big for me, and same with Dougie Hamilton, my namesake. So I think those are kind of the big ones. I didn't really have a pickup this year that really like I got him at the start and then he turned into a great player to stay on my team the whole year. But I think like at the end of the year, I got Kuzmenko late, kind of after he was in one of his slumps. And I got Rana back from U Elon. And that was good for me. So
how did you get Vrana from Elon?
I added him when it was announced that he was going to play some games for Detroit. And then as we all recall, he wasn't doing anything. And then eventually, I moved on. I'm sure you didn't like grab him out of free agency, like off waivers, like you blowing your fab. You probably waited. And then eventually he went to St. Louis and you were the first guy to get him. And yeah, Vrana has been good. Speaking of Matthew Tkachuk, though, I just want to bring him up. Like he didn't go, like he went for $33 in our auction draft, right? Which ranks him like I don't know, 30th, like, you know, like there were like Huberdeau went for 39, you know, you look higher in the list, you know, like guys like Kaprizov, like so high, like, you know, you want Tkachuk over basically all these guys. That definitely was an amazing value pick for you. And but obviously it's not, a lot of people had Matthew Tkachuk, but not everyone won their leagues and won the like the toughest league in the world. So
without showing your hand too much, Ryan, how high would you go? Like just preliminary thoughts. How high would you go for Tkachuk next year at your auction?
Well, so I think this year in the auction, I had him like in the mid 40s. So I threw out 33 as a jump bet, expecting to crawl from there, and it didn't. So I don't know, next year, I don't think I'm gonna be able to afford Matthew Tkachuk next year, is what I'm anticipating. I think, you know, a couple auction rates, I think he's at least a 60 something, maybe 70 something dollar guy.
Yeah.
By the way, we also have Harrison, the runner up in Kakupfel, on the line. We'll get to you, Harrison, in just a sec. Very, very quick. I'll point out something quickly about Ryan's draft, which is very interesting. I don't know if now, if Ryan, you have to like do it. Like, I think I didn't like follow the same strategy, or maybe I did and it didn't work out for me. I don't know. I'll be curious to see how it goes for you as like a returning champion next year. But I love how in your drafts, it looks like you didn't spend that much on, like, you didn't spend a lot on like your top end guys. Like, your biggest bet was Kyle Connor, which maybe even didn't work out that well for you. Spent 46 on him. And then after that, Matthew Tkachuk was your next highest at 33, and this is like when, like, you know, McDavid was going from in the 70s. But yeah, just a ton of like mid-tier guys where that's where you got like Hamilton and you got Sorokin, Brent Burns, Braden Point. Like, honestly, like, I'm looking at your draft and it doesn't even look like so insane. So I'm not seeing like big stars like had like insane seasons outside of Matthew Tkachuk. So I guess almost like I feel like that's almost more of a compliment, just like what kind of in-season player you are. It's just like, because, you know, like the couple is like, obviously drafting is important, but I'd say like being able to like maximize those four moves you have each week and just like navigating your matchups and figuring out when to start planning for the next week and all of this, clearly you mastered that. And not only this year, right, in the previous year you won the fast track, which is super impressive as well. So yeah, we're definitely going to need to get you on the show sometimes to share your expertise.
If Ryan, before we let you go, like if you had one tip for like any current or future Kakupfel participant, like how have you done it? What, like, I'm sure it's hard. You can't distill it to one piece of advice or information. Maybe we'll get more from you in the off season. But again, like you have done basically like the impossible path, which is win 1 in 430 or whatever chance of winning the fast track and then winning the top tier without being there the year before. So yeah, what's worked for you? What's your one piece of advice for any team starting out or still trying to climb?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is sort of just like schedule and deployment, like how valuable those things are in season. And it's kind of both the vein of like, you know, understanding who's playing on the power plays, how much time they're getting, how many games they play. But then also like roster wise, like I think, and this comes up in Discord a lot, you know, like don't get too bought in. Like there's many different ways to play and don't feel like you have to roster sort of a certain makeup. You know, like you can go down to less than four defensemen. You can go down to less than two goalies. You know, some weeks it maybe makes sense to have no goalies. Some weeks it might make sense to have three goalies, four goalies. So I think like kind of the biggest difference for me, kind of like as years have gone on, I've gotten better and had more success, is sort of like the time, looking at the schedule and deployment, and kind of finding all the different ways I can kind of like Tetris those things into my lineup to get the most points I can.
I love the Tetris visual there for making it all work. Well, congrats, Ryan, for Ryan Wood, our new Kakupful ultimate champion. We will hear more from you next year, including we're also going to hear more from Harrison, who's with us here as well. Harrison was the giant killer in the Kakupful Tier 1 playoffs. He squeaked in to the postseason, like just barely, like it was almost auto relegated for not making the championship bracket. Then not only won to get in the final week of the season, but won the first round against a 3 seed. And then Harrison took out the 1 seed, Mark, in a matchup that like we polled everybody on our Discord, like, who do you think was going to win this matchup? It was 100% for Mark. And like, I no one even wanted to throw Harrison a bone.
That's a bulletin board material.
Right. Yeah. So Harrison, I mean, you've gone from almost being relegated to like runner up, finalist. It's basically the second best fantasy manager in the world, I think it's fair to call you. What's your take on how your season went, and how, you know, did you go from being on the verge to being eliminated to finding yourself almost winning the whole thing?
Hey guys, so I had my draft. I definitely planned, I think, on making the playoffs. I liked my draft for sure. Getting to playoffs and then playing the competition that I was up against, probably not as confident, especially going up against Marcus. You know, it's so hard to go up against a team that Marcus was probably like preparing for this specific matchup for over a month. So he had like such a huge games play advantage over me, but somehow I was still able to pull it off, which was good. And then, against this finals matchup against Ryan, I had an early lead. You know, things were going great. The weekend comes along and his team just starts scoring hat tricks. So pretty tough to compete with that.
Who were the hat trick getters?
So he had back-to-back nights. Matt, of course, Matt Chuck.
Right.
You know, hat trick and an assist, I think. And then Alex Tuck, who had a hat trick last night. And Ryan had a killer night last night. Oh, my God.
So interestingly, I'm looking at your draft, Harrison. Also, like Ryan, you didn't go big. Like your highest paid player was Jake Gensel at $40. And then you had Patrick Kane at 36, which is like kind of a whiff. Like you would think like, but again, yeah, you just like really got a lot of middle tier guys. Obviously, Jack Hughes at $32, an amazing value there. And then, yeah, it looks like, again, like I think that this, like the two of you making it to the finals just goes to show that the draft, I don't want to say the draft isn't everything, because I'm not saying you had bad drafts, but you don't need like to have, you know, for the people who aren't in tier one that aren't in auctions, but like are in, you know, lower tiers. Let's say you get like, you know, 10th out of 14th or like 14th pick or whatever. And you're like, oh, I'm not going to get McDavid. I don't have a chance. I'm not going to get like one of these superstars. You see two guys here that didn't need superstars to take it all the way. Well, Jack Hughes turned out to be a superstar, but you don't need, you know, but you got him like, it wouldn't have been in the first round that you would have taken Jack Hughes. So yeah, you don't need to necessarily have that high pick.
It's almost like, you know, whenever a team wins the cup, like Chicago, LA, Tampa, like everybody else tries to emulate these teams. And Harrison, like, again, like you came so close, but you didn't make it. Does that mean you're going to change your tack next year? Or are you thinking you might, like this worked well enough and you're going to give it another go? Like, maybe let me reframe. Is there one change that you already know you're going to make for next year?
Honestly, not really. No, this is what I know. This is what I do. I like to draft, you know, like the mid, like the next level besides the elite guys, because the way I see it is you need as many can't miss guys on your roster as possible, because with how much you churn, especially in tier one, like you need guys that will stay on your roster for all seasons. So when people are spending $80 on McDavid and, you know, Drysdale and stuff like that, yeah, they're great players and they're going to have a huge impact, but that just means that you're going to have so many more guys that aren't sure things on your roster. So I don't know. I mean, and then there's just an aspect of luck. Like you need to hit the right guys, like Jack Hughes at 32, and same with Ryan, Matt Tkachuk at like 33 or whatever he had was, you know, a big deal and clearly helped us get to where we are.
One last thing I'll mention, it's interesting, right? Ryan took the fastest way possible, and Harrison, you know, has been a patron since 2018. You came second place in tier two last year, now second place in tier one next year. So it'll be really fun to see. Now you're going to be the giant that people... I feel like it's going to be so fun in tier one next year. At the end of the show, I think we've got a list of like who all the tier one participants are going to be. We're going to have Mark there, of course, who was like the regular season giant. We're going to have Ryan, the ultimate champion. Now we have Harrison, second place 2 years in a row. Now second place in like tier one. It's going to be a battle.
It's going to be an amazing group. And it's like Mark didn't spend more than $30 for any of his guys. Ryan and Harrison didn't spend like more than $40 for any of theirs. Jordan, who is also returning to tier one next year for his sixth cup full season, patron since 2017. He was in the semis, and he paid for two guys above $40. He had Ovechkin at 56 and Timo Meier at 44. So we'll see. It's going to be really interesting. Like, there might be some really great bargains if everybody goes in saying, like, I'm not spending more than $40 on a player or 50. Like, it's going to be really hard to resist temptation. And actually, Elon, we know most of the other competitors. So just quickly while we wrap this up, we've got Ryan and Harrison. Ryan in his third season next year, Harrison in his fifth. Mark, patron since 2018, playing his fifth season in tier one next year. It was fifth cupful season, but in tier one. Jordan, since 2017, in his sixth cupful season. The rest of tier one next year, we have our tier two champions. PJ, since 2018, and Mark, since 2019, will be there. We have our tier two runner-ups, Brett and Kale. Brett, since 2018, Kale playing since 2019. We've got Christopher coming up from winning his tier three matchup since 2016. He's going to be the veteran of this tier. It's going to be his seventh season in the cupful next year. And we know two of our tier four winners are going to be up there. We've got Jose going in. It'll be his third year in the cupful. And Adam, also his third year in the cupful next year, playing in tier one. We have our fast track champ, Nicholas, who won't be copying the Ryan path because it was his fourth season this year to win the fast track. But he'll try and be the guy who wins the fast track and then takes out the rest of tier one. We have a couple matchups still to be determined. So there's it's a murderer's row, as always, in tier one next year. And Ryan and Harrison will have huge targets on their backs. Thank you both so much for being here with us, for sharing a little bit about your season. And we might try and have get a little more advice from you over the course of the offseason, either on Discord or on the show.
Yeah, I mean, definitely all the patrons should know that if you ask an advice question and Ryan or Harrison responds, you should probably take their advice more than myself, because I will not, as I know you were waiting for my name to be mentioned as one of these tier one returners. I will not be there, nor will I be in tier two. My lesson is probably you don't want to be spending a lot of money on Merzlikins and Grubauer in the draft. That didn't turn out as well. I should have definitely followed up with these guys.
Save it for the Why I Lost show.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. That's a show we do every year. Okay, well, these guys won't be participating. But yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Congrats so much again to Ryan and also to Harrison for your amazing seasons. A new tier one ultimate champion, Ryan entering the hallowed halls, and Harrison, it'll be fun to see if next year you'll be joining those halls as well. But yeah, thanks again. Congratulations. Hopefully you go and have a big party. I don't know. You know, live it up.
All right. Thanks, guys. And congrats to Ryan. Great season, man.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Harrison. Same to you.
All right, Brian, that was a lot of fun. Hopefully people enjoyed listening to these great minds talk fantasy. Definitely have a lot more to hear from them, like you said. But for now, we're going to finish off part one of this episode. We've got a lot of guys to talk about to go back and focus on next week. And so we're going to get all into that in part two of this mega episode of Keeping Carlson. So you should already have it in your podcast feed if you're properly subscribed, to make sure to go do that by, you know, iTunes. You know where to get podcasts at this point. We're at the end of the season here. Please stay subscribed. And when you're subscribed, you could stay all summer, because we're going to have a ton of episodes going all throughout. Even when the season's over, we're going to talk about the playoffs. We're going to have beat writer interviews. We're going to do these retrospectives. Like, we're thinking fantasy all year long. That's what you got to do to be successful like Ryan, our new Cacuffle Tier 1 Ultimate Champion. So Brian, with that, let's say goodbye for now, and we'll see you all in part two. Bye.